You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
So, hey, we've been making this podcast for over 2.5 years.
What?
Yep, thanks to listeners like you. And from the gate, people have asked us for merchandise or additional content or even some hang time with me and Scott.
That's weird.
It is. But we think we have a solution for you.
Yep, we are excited to announce that we have a new Patreon page.
Yeah, and you know how people are patrons of the arts? Well, in this case, we're the arts.
Hmm. And by becoming a Patreon, you'll get bonus content, access to outtakes that the general public will never see, extremely cool merch, and depending on what tier you get on, a monthly hang time with Laura and I.
Yep, and it all starts at just $5 a month.
That's nothing.
Right? Not per day, not per week. It's only $5 per month.
And you're guaranteed merchandise.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So click the link in the show notes to read about the different tiers and see what great stuff you can get. Become a podcast patron. Join our Patreon today at www.patreon.com/theonlyoneintheroom.
I don't think I'm the best at anything, and that's fine. I don't need to be the best at anything. All I ever really wanted to do was inspire people to try something new and to explore their creativity. That's all I care about. If I can give people what they feel is a permission to be creative and try something new, then I feel like I've done my job as a human being on this earth. That's what I was put here for. To help people discover their own possibilities.
People keep asking me about Cute Booty Lounge or CBL's new podcast, Behind the Booty with Kelly Nishimoto. I mean, by now, they all know that CBL is sponsoring our current season, and I just have to add that they are just the best partners a podcast could ask for.
And we at The Only One in the Room are so excited about Behind the Booty that we are bringing you a preview of what you'll hear on Kelly's show when it launches next year.
Yes.
On certain Thursdays over the next few weeks, you'll hear one of these incredibly moving Behind the Booty episodes right here on our feed.
That's right. And today you'll hear Kelly's talk with her friend Mark Montano, former fashion designer and now one of the world's leading crafters and craft bloggers.
Yes, this one's really interesting. I especially like the story he tells about being a kid and his dad buys him a gun and then he cries because he wants a sewing machine.
Right. Oh, I love that one. And then his dad buys it for him.
Mm-hmm. You're really going to want to hear this for yourself. So please enjoy this episode of Behind the Booty with Kelly Nishimoto.
Enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hi, guys. Thank you for joining in. This is Behind the Booty with Kelly Nishimoto, and I'm your host, Kelly Nishimoto. I'm the creator of Cute Booty Lounge. We are a lifestyle brand for women by women. Check us out on Instagram at Cute Booty Lounge or shop online at cutebooty.com. We have a ton of options from leggings and shorts to cute tops, loungewear, and sleepwear. Dress it up, dress it down, wear it to the gym and beyond. Cute Booty is not just a brand, it's a lifestyle. I'd like to thank the Only One in the Room podcast for hosting us. This is our 4th of 6 episodes that the Only One in the Room podcast is helping us produce. So thank you, Scott and Laura, for helping us get our shit together. To give you an idea of what to expect from our podcast, we feature people who are doing big things with their lives, from entrepreneurship to being a motivational badass to life-changing stories and journeys and much more. We're taking a deeper look into people and what their story is and what their why is and so much more. With that being said, I'd like to introduce this episode's guest, my dear friend, and I describe him as the craftiest motherfucker in the world. He is seriously one of the funniest people with one of the biggest hearts. I can't say enough about you, and you really came at the perfect time. This is my dear friend, Mark Montano.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure.
You're going to make me cry.
Oh, I love you. You really came at the perfect time.
Well, I love you too. You know that.
I know that.
Anytime you need me, you just call out my name. I'd sing the song, but you know
what? Please sing it. Come on, Mark.
I'm a terrible singer. We know this.
We've already established that you love singing. Mark, can you tell our listeners where to find you and how to follow your journey?
Well, you can find me on YouTube, Mark Montano, or Make Your Mark. I'll pop up. Or Instagram, The Mark Montano. Or starting on November 27th, you can find me on Discovery Plus on a new show called Meet Your Makers Showdown. And my co-hosts are Chrissy Metz from This Is Us and Leanne Rimes.
I'm so excited for this show. And I have to do like a little bit more of an introduction because I didn't actually tell you what he does and what his background is. He is a former fashion designer from New York City. He is the host of 10 Years Younger, While You're Out. He had his own show that he wrote, produced, and crafted everything called Make Your Mark on PBS. I met him on a show I co-hosted with him called My Celebrity Home, and he now has his new show coming out. He has a best-selling craft book called Big Ass Book of Crafts that has how many volumes?
It's in its 29th printing, maybe 30th at this point.
And then how many actual...
So I've written 11 craft books and 2 sort of how-to books.
Amazing. And now he is literally the most well-known crafter DIY guy on Instagram and YouTube. So, I mean, literally when you walk into his house, it's like a museum of crafting. It's epic. And I moved this guy to Colorado and his house... I found it's like you want to stop packing and looking. You want to look through all your stuff. Not that I was creeping or anything.
Stuff is a nice word. But,
I mean, one person's trash is another one's treasures. And you had a lot of fucking treasures.
Oh, my God. Yes, I did.
I would like to start off by you telling the audience where you're from, how you got into fashion.
Well, I was born in Colorado, in southeastern Colorado, in a very small town, and I knew at a super young age how incredibly bored I was. So on, I think it was my 12th birthday, my dad bought me a 12-gauge gun, because that's what you do in Colorado, and I started to cry and said, I want a sewing machine. So he went out and got me one.
Oh, I love your dad for that.
He's awesome. Still awesome. And I decided when I was 13 that I was going to move to New York City, work at Macy's, have a penthouse with a swimming pool, and I was going to be a famous fashion designer.
And you moved to New York.
And I became a fashion designer.
And did you work at Macy's?
I never did. And I never got a penthouse or a swimming pool, but that's okay.
So how did your fashion career start?
It was kind of by accident, actually. And it's a weird story. Do you want to hear it?
Of course I do.
Okay. So I worked for this witch. You've seen The Devil Wears Prada?
Yes.
Multiply that woman by 10.
No way.
She was so mean. And her company was an Italian sportswear company. And I was sort of the, while I was in college at FIT, the runaround guy, pick up thread and go to the pattern maker and pick up coffee and hang up her fur coats, things like that. One day she sent me to deliver a birthday gift and some flowers to Ben Shaw, who was the owner of Oscar de la Renta. And she said, do not go up to his apartment, leave it with the doorman. So
and
I went up to
listen.
His apartment.
I was gonna say
and I met him. And I said, I am such a huge fan of Oscar de la Renta. He goes, you should intern there. I said, I would love to. Who do I talk to? He's like, my sons. So a week later, I was interning at Oscar de la Renta, and that's how I started my career.
And how did you let the witch know you were leaving?
I quit. I quit, witch.
My bitch, witch.
Pretty much. She was really upset with me.
So you had a store, I know. Tell us where your store was, and then tell us how your little... I guess it was a little store. How many square feet was it?
250
Okay, so it was a little... I wasn't wrong. I didn't want to, like, demean it. So tell us about your store and how that ended up on TV.
Oh, interesting. So, well, I opened a boutique in the East Village of New York City right before it started to gentrify. So I got a really great rent, and I was living in an apartment above it. You remember that apartment? You visited me there. And... how the store ended up on TV?
Yes.
Or okay. So, well, it was in a movie. It was in the movie Rent. Did you know that?
I don't think I knew this.
Yes. When Adam Pascal is singing down the street in the East Village, he walks right by my store and there's the awning. Very exciting for me.
But there was another TV show. Maybe it wasn't the store. Maybe it was just the clothes.
Which TV show?
Sex in the City.
Oh, gosh,
what
yes.
What is wrong?
Oh.
Only the biggest TV show of our generation.
I forget all these things. So, yeah, well, when I was wholesaling my collection, Pat Fields bought the collection for her shops, Patricia Field.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know who and, that's his friend Pat.
Yes. And, yeah, so a lot of the clothes ended up on Sex in the City, which was really exciting for me. It was an exciting time to be in New York City. There were lots of things happening, and Sex in the City was one of those things that was happening around you all the time. They were always there filming, and it was fun to see my clothes on TV.
How was the energy in the city at that time?
It was exciting, and it was fun. Yeah, it was a really, really great time to be in New York.
Take me through a day in your life. You're in New York City. You've done an internship at Oscar de la Renta. Now you have your own store in the heart of the city. Sort of the heart of the city, the new heart of the city now. What was a day in the life of Mark Montano like?
Oh, gosh, it was great. Well, you remember my best friend, Walter.
Yes.
Who was in his 90s, who would wake me up every morning at 5 o'clock by sweeping out in front of my apartment and then knocking on my door. Mark, 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 Mark. Like, he just was relentless. And like, I'm up. I'm up. So that was the beginning of my day. Pretty much every day for 20 some years is him knocking on my door. And I loved it too, by the way. And I loved him. And then I would get up and have breakfast with him, usually a bagel and coffee. He would go pick it up. And then I'd get ready and I'd open my store at about 10:30, 11. The interns would come in and we would start making dresses like Mad Men all day. If we were prepping for a show, we'd have models come in for fittings. We'd run out and everybody was running errands all day long, finding fabrics, finding zippers, notions, whatever it is that we needed, finding shoes for fashion shows, all of that stuff, doing press, publicity. The East Village was super duper hot at the time. And it was just a fun place to be. We'd close the boutique about 8 o'clock and then everybody would go out for beers and we'd start over the very next day.
How long did you have your store open for?
I had that boutique in the East Village for 17 years.
Holy shit. I didn't realize it was
that
long.
Super long time to spend in a 250 square foot boutique.
Wait, is that including the back room where you sewed?
That was including the back room. It was super tiny, but it worked because my apartment was above it mm-hmm. and we used part of that apartment. There was a big pattern making table in my apartment. So we used to work up there.
So selfish question. How many sewing machines did you have?
I had... three industrial.
Single needle, overlock.
I had a single needle, three single needles and one Merrill machine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like geek talk for fashion designers.
Total geek talk, right? Seriously.
Totally. Like the most exciting part of my journey as a designer was always finding really cool weights to weight down your patterns. You know what I mean? Like different sizes, different shapes, different colors, the best scissors. And then I bought the pattern punch. That was really exciting to me.
The big yes. Heavy duty hole punch. Yes. We are really geeking out. People have no idea what we're talking about.
No clue. Pattern hooks. And another really exciting thing I bought was a grommet machine. I thought I was so cool.
You can make shower curtains for the rest of your life.
Exactly. Okay. So then you transitioned into TV. Now, did you transition into TV while you had the store or were you phasing the store out?
Well, At that point, I had been a fashion designer for quite a long time. And as you know, it can be very, very stressful showing every 6 months during the collections, production, shipping. I honestly don't know how you do it. I was listening to you on the phone yesterday and I thought, that is the person I want to be when I grow up. I was so impressed with the way you handled your sales meeting and then made those people hungry to buy by just being honest about your product and how good it was and that you were able to do whatever it was that they needed. And I thought, that is what I was missing when I was a fashion designer, is that level of professionalism and confidence, and just, it was impressive.
Thank you. I didn't think you were listening. I appreciate that.
No, I was listening.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't think I had that confidence though starting out. And I've been doing it for 20 years now. So maybe that's where, maybe it's like year 17 through 20 that you finally find the balls to just own what you do.
Yeah, I don't know. I never had that. I never had that confidence in what I was doing. And I couldn't take the stress of it. I just wasn't built for that. And things started to transition in my life and opportunities started to pop up. Someone asked me to write for a magazine. So I started to do that just as something different to do. And that was Cosmo Girl magazine.
I forgot you did that.
And yes. I wrote for that magazine for 10 years. And I turned the first couple of years worth of articles into my first book, which was super sweet. The Ultimate Bedroom Makeover Guide for Teen Girls.
It's still relevant.
It's still what my apartment looks like.
Oh, so all the walls are green?
Not pink.
I know your decorating style. So what do you think when you enter my space? Because I know how I feel when I enter your space. How do you feel when you enter my space?
Hardcore gothic, pastel gothic.
Gothic.
That's how I describe your style.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pastel gothic.
Dig that.
Which means like hot pinks and blacks. Mm-hmm. And I do love your oil slick obsession.
It's really sickening.
It's there.
It's, I mean, you should see my Amazon wish list. It's embarrassing. I have it quick saved, like oil slick iridescent. Yeah. Okay. So I want to dive into the TV thing.
Okay.
So you wrote for Cosmo Girl for 10 years. And then how does that transition into on camera?
Well, I realized that a lot of the things that I was making in these magazines and the kind of windows that we were doing in our storefront were ending up, I don't know how to say this nicely, but being copied by stores like Urban Outfitters and in other magazines. So I thought, you know, I need to somehow take a bigger ownership of what I'm creating because I didn't like to see it being copied. Not my dresses, not my window concepts, not the objects that I was making in the magazines. And I just sort of asked the universe. I was like, you know, I really want to be on television. And I got a cold call from a producer who saw my book at a dentist's office. And he said, hey, I produce a show called While You Were Out for TLC. And we want you to come and audition. And I have a rule that no matter how uncomfortable I am with something, I say yes. And I think everyone should do that. You should always take every opportunity. You can always back out and say no later, but at least try it so that you have no regrets. So I went to the audition and I was very nervous, and they had me in this empty room and they're like, design this room. You've been in auditions like that.
It's just like they have no idea how the mind of a designer works. Or like what you need for inspiration. They just want you to do it on the fly, which is all good and fair, but they should at least create more of a platform and a space for that to fly instead of just like, hey, nice to meet you. Can you design some shit in here? And then we'll record it and then we'll let you know if you got the job or not.
That's
pretty much how it is.
So I fake designed an empty room, and 2 weeks later I got a call and they're like, we're flying you to Maine to film your first episode.
That is awesome.
And yeah.
Okay, so I feel like the listeners really need to go onto your Instagram like right now and look at what you do and your creative vibe while they listen to this podcast, because I just wish we could visually take the listener into your world, walking into your house, the fabrics that you use, the creativity that is just everywhere, from painted plates and silverware to one of the things that stands out to me is a collage that you made into a piece of artwork from paint chips or paint samples from Home Depot, like things like that. You literally take nothings and you make the most gorgeous somethings out of that. So I want the listener to have that in their brain while they listen to you speak, because it just doesn't do you justice not having a visual. It's like you should be walking around with just like a visual of what the heck you do, because it is really incredible.
Dang.
So please tell them your Instagram again so they can literally go on right now.
Okay, it's the Mark Montano on Instagram.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so you're on while you're out. How did that transition into 10 years younger?
Well, I was doing pretty well on While You Were Out, and they were asking me to do more and more episodes. And then one of the big executives at Discovery Networks, I think, called me and said, "Hey, do you want your own show?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he said, "Oh, good, because you have to fly to California next week and you're going to be there for about a year." I was like, "Ah." And then he hung up. And I thought he was kidding. I really did. Like, it did not register in my head what had just happened. And then he realized that the way he said it, that it probably didn't register with me that he was serious. So he called me back. He goes, "Do you understand what I just said?" I'm like, "Not really." He goes, "You have your own show. You're moving to California next week. Figure it out."
Wow.
And so I did. Because I say yes to things.
What year was this?
Maybe the year before I met you. So if you can remember what year that was.
I met you in 2008, maybe seven.
Are you sure it wasn't earlier than that?
Positive. Because my celebrity home.
Then yes, you're right.
I always guide my timeline by my relationships. And I remember I had just gone through a breakup when I got my celebrity home.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it was whatever the year before that was.
Okay. So 2006, 2007.
Yeah. And I'm terrible with dates because my life has just been always just this whirlwind of things happening. And I just know where I have to be the next day, but I never know what day it is. Is that weird?
No, it's not weird at all.
I don't pay attention to years or days or things like that. And people are like, what year did you do this? I'm like, I have no idea.
Okay. So when you moved to LA, did you buy the house right away?
After 1 year.
Okay. I remember now because, the reason why we have the timeline off, I came in on season 2 of Celebrity Home. So the first year would have been 2006. So you probably moved to LA in 2005.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so what happened to 10 Years Younger?
They were just changing hosts every year. And so they went with a different host after me. And I went back to While You Were Out. And then I went to My Celebrity Home.
Okay. And then your craft journey. So I know you're an amazing designer. You've got the homestead done. You've got women's fashion done. So now how do you take that experience and move that into the DIY and crafty space?
That was actually the easiest thing I think I've ever done, because sewing a dress is pretty complicated, or it can be, depending on the dress. And you can take all of those techniques and cover a lampshade pretty easily. So I used to do things like that in my house. Cover lampshades, make my own duvet covers. Super simple, right? It's just a huge pillowcase. Make my own pillows, weave kooky rugs out of like scrap fabrics, you know, things like that. Recover furniture with extra cool fabric that I had left over from a collection. So it translated really well into DIY, and I realized that there was more variety in making a painting and covering a sofa and sewing a duvet cover and covering a lampshade and spray painting a table than there was in just making dresses all the time. And I never thought that I would get bored of being a fashion designer, but I did. Mm-hmm. I did. And I also couldn't handle the stress of it. So DIY just seemed logical. And when I look back at my childhood and like my early life, and I remember people asking me what I wanted to do when I grew up, and I always said, I just want to make stuff, because that's all I wanted to do was hang out in my room, cut up cereal boxes, make crazy dioramas. And
it's a diorama.
Like, you know, those three-dimensional box art pieces, you know, with different objects in them, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to do.
You still ever. Make those.
Yeah, I still make those.
I am still
6 years old.
I didn't know it was called a diorama.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah.
Growing up in Colorado in such a small town where all you wanted to do was make stuff, how was that experience growing up a little different, a little more creative than the average child?
Well, I think maybe I had to be a lot more resourceful, because it wasn't like you could just go to a store in my hometown and get red paint if you needed it. These things weren't really available. This was a very small town. So if I wanted red paint, I had to rummage through the garage and see if there was anything in there. And if not, I would rummage through my friends' garages. And I was just constantly making something out of nothing. And I feel like that's the way most people were before the Industrial Revolution, right? Like everybody just took whatever it is that they could and turned it into whatever it is that they needed. And I love that kind of ingenuity and creativity and... Yeah, I love it.
I remember those times because you know, you're in your garage or in your room and you find something that you really love and you have an end goal of what it's going to look like and you just get so lost in it. And I feel like that's something that's missing from our culture and society today. People are getting lost in their phones, they're getting lost in scrolling through mindless content on TikTok and Instagram. But if they could watch what you do and try to, we can never duplicate the actual project, but just to duplicate the experience. I feel like it's the experience they're missing out on.
And that's, you hit the nail on the head. That's all it's about. Mm-hmm. Creativity is about the experience of being creative, getting lost, making something. The end result doesn't really matter. Once the end result happens, it's over. But
what's the coolest thing you've ever made?
Gosh, that is a tough question.
Top three
coolest thing I ever made. I'm trying to figure out what comes to mind. I don't know. There's like almost 1,000 craft projects on YouTube.
I can tell you one of my favorites.
Tell me.
The doll head marionettes. Those were so creepy and cool.
Yeah, I do love a good doll head project. Gosh, I don't know. I don't know what the top three things I've ever made are.
What do you like better in your career? Like if you had to name one of your jobs that was kind of your favorite, is it fashion? Is it TV? Is it writing books? Or is it crafting on camera?
I think crafting on camera. When you create something and you're doing it in front of an audience, it gives people permission to do the same thing. And that permission is a lot of time what we need to unlock our own creativity. If you see somebody else painting a wall in a really bright color and you've always been afraid of color and you see a great result, then you're like, wait a minute, that looks really good, right? I should do that. I don't think I'm the best at anything. And that's fine. I don't need to be the best at anything. All I ever really wanted to do is inspire people to try something new and to explore their creativity. That's all I care about. If I can give people what they feel is a permission to be creative and try something new, then I feel like I've done my job as a human being on this earth. That's what I was put here for, to help people discover their own possibilities.
That was a really beautiful message. One of the other things that I would like to ask you is, in your history, do you have like a defining moment or like a situation that you faced where you felt like you weren't good enough or you weren't where you wanted to be? And then what did you do to turn that around, or like a defining moment of your life?
I think there, with anybody, we have many defining moments. I think the biggest one was deciding to move to New York City when I was 19. I had about $350. I had transferred to FIT in New York City. I'd never been to New York City. I fibbed, told my parents that I had been on a school trip just because they were so nervous about me moving. I was like, it's fine.
How old were you?
I was 19. Okay. And I picked up. I did not even have a suitcase. I had clothes in a backpack and a box. And in that box was a sewing machine that my dad gave me and fabric. And that's what I moved to New York City with.
Wow. And you still to this day travel pretty much with only a backpack.
Yeah, pretty much.
I see how you, yeah, I love that. But you didn't bring your sewing machine this time.
I didn't. It's at home though. I still have that sewing machine.
I was going to ask, that was my next question.
I do.
I wish I would have kept mine. I mean, I donated it, so that feels okay, but I still wish I would have had that just for the memory, whether it worked well or not. What was the brand?
It's a Singer, and it's in a little black box.
I'm jealous. Mine was just a Brother. Singer was always like my dream sewing machine. What do you like better, home machine or industrial machine?
Home, hands down.
Why?
I don't know. There's just something about, I fall in love with sewing machines. Mm-hmm. They are the inanimate object that I would marry and sleep with.
Sounds kind of painful.
It's really weird. I must have 16 sewing machines at this point.
I don't remember packing those.
I think I drove a few of them to LA.
I maybe saw one machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
No, they're a lot.
So you get to New York City. What's your first move?
I am staying at a friend of a friend's on her floor. Turns out she's a hoarder. Didn't really know what a hoarder was at the time, but there you have it. I had a place to land. Mm-hmm. And the next day was orientation at college at FIT. And I had called the college. They said, we have a job board. I went the very next day, my first full day in New York City, I went to that job board and I ripped off every single postcard and called every single job on a payphone, by the way, because that was a long time ago. And that's when I landed that first job with that lady.
With the witch.
Yep.
Who is the coolest person you met in New York? Because I know you've met and hung out with a lot of really cool people.
Oh, gosh. That is a tough question. Probably Keith Haring.
Was he like at the height of his career by then?
He was, actually. And I have a tiny little sketch that he made for me.
I was going to ask you, is he the one that left you a sketch on a napkin?
Yes, but we're not going to get into that story.
I wasn't going to ask about the story. I'm only asking about the sketch on the napkin. And so you have so many fond memories. This is all in the apartment with Walter. Not, I know you weren't living with him, but he was across it. So your apartment next to Walter is 17 years worth of memories. What are your favorite, like, what are some of your favorite ones from that apartment? I feel like that should be a TV show. I think we should write a show called Mark and Walter, The Chronicles of the New York Apartment.
I love that man so much.
I know you did.
He was my best friend. I met him when I first opened the store. He came down with a plate of cookies that he'd baked. Mm-hmm. And he was probably in his 70s at that point.
How old were you at the time?
30s. Mm. And he's like, I made you these cookies. And I'm like, thank you so much. And I went to shake his hand and he did not like to be touched at all. And he scurried off. He shuffled off. And we just became best friends. And he never, ever touched me. Like, he never hugged me, never patted me on the shoulder. He didn't like to be touched at all, except for the day that I moved to LA. He cried and he stood by the cab and he hugged me. And it was, oh my God, now I'm going to get upset. It was crazy. Yeah, he was my best friend for a long time.
When I was packing your stuff, I saw that you had the picture. And when I picked the picture up to wrap it, the back fell out.
Oh, Seesaw's funeral.
Yeah, that was, I mean, just listening to your stories of him, I've always identified with him for some reason. I did get the pleasure of meeting him the one time in New York. It's so cool how someone who's so much older than you can have such an impact on just like your life and your career and like how you navigate life.
He was the best friend a guy could have, you know. Was we were, our ages were so, I mean, he was 50 years older than me and he was born in the apartment that he died in. And he died 5 feet from where he was actually born. He was born in the kitchen on the floor and he died at the kitchen table in the same apartment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Really, really good. Sweet. Funny, funny guy.
Wow. Okay. So now that I've made both of us cry, that was not the intention. What would you say your one piece of advice is to someone who is a creative mind like you that might be in a small town? What would your advice be when they are ready to step out?
Be fearless and take every single opportunity that comes your way. And if you don't see an opportunity, make one for yourself.
That's a really good one. I feel like people always feel like they're confined to just go with what's available to them. And minds like you and I, if we don't see what we want, we just find a way to create it for ourselves. And I wish that was something that more people could embrace, especially younger people, that you don't have to conform to anyone's rules or social acceptances. Just be who you are and make what you want.
Go for it. Be fearless. Everyone's always going to be afraid. I'm always afraid of new experiences. I was horrified about starting this new show with, you know, such big celebrities like Leanne and Chrissy. I was having a panic attack the morning of the show. And I called a friend and he said, your whole life is about creating opportunities and you somehow manifested this to happen in your life. So you need to own it. And I'm going to hang up on you right now.
I mean, there really is a good lesson in that. Just because you weren't necessarily in the spotlight recently like these two people were, like you have just as much experience, if not more, under your belt in this world. You know, so in my opinion, and I think a lot of people need to hear this, is they were just as lucky to have you on the show as you were to have them by your side on the show. So that's my two cents.
Thank you. It was a good experience. And they were lovely, lovely to work with.
So when does that air again?
November 27th on Discovery Plus. And just today, I think the promo dropped. Oh.
I see your face when you said that. You don't like the promo. Did you re-edit it?
Yeah, I did. For my page.
I'm dying. Okay, I'm going to have to watch it and see if I can see the differences. Well, Mark, thank you very much for joining me today. What a pleasant surprise, because, again, Mark lives in Colorado, and he just happened to fly out while I'm doing my podcast to work on some press for the show. And so we're super lucky to have him in person. So I want to thank you for being here.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. Are you kidding? I wouldn't have missed this for the world. I would have flown out just for this.
I would have never asked that. So I'm so glad you were here, because I would have missed my own opportunity that I'm supposed to create. Thank you guys so much for tuning in for our fourth episode with Mark Montano. Can you please tell the listeners where they can find you and follow your journey?
Yeah, so you can find me on YouTube. Look for Make Your Mark or Mark Montano. And on Instagram at the Mark Montano.
You can follow me at Kelly Nishimoto on social media, also kellynishimoto.com. And you can follow the journey of Cute Booty at Cute Booty Lounge or cutebooty.com for shopping for some cute booty. Thank you again to Laura and Scott from The Only One in the Room for being our podcast mentors. That really means a lot to us. We're super excited to be part of your feed drop, and we're looking forward to many more podcasts in the future.
Hey, thank you for listening to Behind the Booty with Kelly Nishimoto. It'll be back with brand new episodes on December 2nd, so please stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.